I'll tell you something about the new torsional local models for hadronic strings. So here's my plan of the talk. So first I'll mention the background and motivation to study this problem. And then we'll try to first compactify the hadronic flux strings on the so-called Calabi-Gray models. These are some very nice compact but non-Kähler Calabi L threefold. We'll see that we're almost there, but we get some degenerate compactification. To deal with this degeneracy, we'll need to give some other geometric interpretation of this Calabi-Gray model, and this will lead us to part three, which is some genuine compactification. Well, it's not really a compactification because it's on the non-compact Calabi L threefold. This will include some very important local models for hadronic strings with flux. And finally, I'll give you a very concrete example and conclude my talk today. So basically, I'm working on the mathematical side, and all of you must know much more physics than I do. So please correct me if I say anything wrong, or if you have any questions. Okay. So the story goes as follows. In 85, this celebrated paper by Candelas, Horowitz, Strominger, and Witten, they find out this superstrings with zero flux can be compactified on Ricci flat Kähler Calabi L threefolds. So Kähler simply means the complex geometry with the Riemannian metric is flat up to the first order. And it's locally something, it's a trivial condition, but globally it's there's a non-trivial consequence. So there are lots of topological constraints on the on a compact Kähler manifold. And right after that, Strominger and also Hall study the compactification problem for hadronic strings with a non-zero flux. So basically what they do is that they allow a warp factor. So they consider the metric on the 10-dimensional theory, and they assume it is a warp product of a four-dimensional the space-time and the six-dimensional inner space instead of a trivial product. And they also need a maximally symmetry for the space-time and n equals one supersymmetry. And finally, they also need to cancel the anomaly. And for this, they can write down the geometric equations. In this talk, I will call them Strominger system. Almost 20 years later, Li and Yao reformulate the Strominger system in a more mathematic manner. And today, I'll follow Li Yao's framework. So what I call a Strominger system consists of the following data. So X is a complex threefold with trivial canonical bundle. So it's just a top wedge of the holomorphic cotangent bundle. And so there is a globally defined nowhere vanishing holomorphic threeform, which I'll use capital omega to denote it. And this complex threefold is also equipped with a Hermitian metric. So it's a Riemannian metric which is compatible with the complex structure, but it does not have to be Kähler. A priori, it can be anything. Besides that, we also need a holomorphic vector bundle over X, E, which is E, and it is also equipped with a Hermitian metric on the bundle. And I'll use capital R and F to denote the curvature forms of the holomorphic tangent bundle and the E, respectively. And this system of equations is only the alpha prime expansion to the first order, so higher order corrections are not considered in this talk. So there are three equations, which are also here. I'll explain more about these equations in the next few slides. The key point here I want to mention is that the system makes sense for non-Kähler backgrounds. So X can be non-Kähler. By non-Kähler, I mean it does not support any Kähler metric. So it cannot be, say, embedded in a projective space or. I'm sorry?
What are these equations for?
So this the equations for the to get a compactification on this for the hyperbolic strings. You allow this the flux H to be non-zero. So the left-hand side of this equation here is really D of the flux 3-4. So in general, it's...
But why do you apply the equations and things for probability at some time?
I'm sorry?
It is just the beginning of an alpha prime.
Yeah, yeah. This is
a, I could worry about having.
Yeah, there are also there are people studying higher order interactions. So this one is only the first order.
What's the connection that needs potential?
Okay, so I think there's a I think there's a lot of works about discussing which connection one should use, right? I think many people say it should be used as a Hall connection or maybe minus connection was. So I will use the Chern connection, actually. This is basically for the mathematical reason somehow. So the left-hand side here is a 2-2 form. And so you want to do all this curvature forms also be 2-2 form. And it seems that the Hermitian connection, or mathematically it's called Chern connection, is the only natural connection to guarantee that the curvature term is always 2-2. One. Yeah, I think if you use the Hall connection, say, and there's a paper by Ivanov, which says, so I think actually the reason for one to use the Hall connection is that you also need to add another equation to the system. This is the equation for motion of strings, and basically it is the like the Hermitian Young-Mills equation for the tangent bundle, and the work of Ivanov basically says if you also impose this Hermitian Young-Mills for the tangent bundle and use the Hall connection, what you get, say, up to this first order alpha prime is nothing but the Kähler case. So you don't have anything new from this consideration by allowing this non-zero flux. Okay. Maybe, I'm not sure. Okay. So let me remind you a definition from complex geometry. So suppose you have a complex n-fold, and the Hermitian metric omega is called balanced if its n minus 1 power is d-closed. So this is somehow a dual notion for being Kähler. So being Kähler means d omega is zero. This is like the d star of omega is zero. So now let's look at these three equations. So the third equation tells us our metric omega is conformal to a balanced metric. So which is d omega tilde squared is zero. And from the work of Michelson, so she gave an intrinsic characterization for a complex manifold to admit a balanced metric. So there's a very mild topological obstruction for such a manifold, and this is well understood. And this equation here only depends on the information from your metric. And the first equation is the Hermitian Young-Mills equation. So this is a kind of a higher dimensional analog of instantons in 4D. And by the work of Li and Yao, the existence of such a Hermitian Young-Mills equation is equivalent to the stability of this bundle with respect to a given polarization. So this is again well understood, and it can be thought of as some equation depends only on the bundle itself. It's not so related to the metric on the bundle.
This is for non-Kähler metrics?
Yeah, this also, so this is a non-Kähler generalization of this Donaldson-Uhlenbeck-Yau theorem. Yeah. And the second equation is the anomaly cancellation question comes from this Green-Schwarz mechanism. So this is the hardest part of the three equations because it's a four-form equation. And the first observation we can make is that it restricts the Chern classes of our bundle E. Okay, so what do we know about the solutions to this system? So it's a generalization of this zero flux case, so it should contain the Kähler solutions. So it should contain the Kähler KPLs. Indeed, if we impose the Kähler condition here, then from the third equation here, well, implies this Dilleton field is a constant, which is exactly the same thing as we have a Ricci flat Kähler metric. And then we plug in into the second equation here, we see the left-hand side is zero, and so we want to kill the right-hand side. A very simple choice is just take the E to be our tangent bundle, so R is same thing as F, so we get the anomaly canceled. And then Calabi-Yau's satisfy this Hermitian-Yau-Mills equation automatically. So indeed, we have the scalar Calabi-Yau as our solutions. But what's really interesting is for the non-Kähler case. So in the original paper of Strominger, so he considered this infinitesimally perturbative solution from the Kähler solution. Also write out some orbifold solutions. And in the work of Li and Yao, so they somehow lift this infinitesimal perturbative solutions to a genuine solution. And again, it is a small deformation from the Kähler solution. So later, their technique was further developed by Andreas Garcia-Fernandez to deal with more general perturbations. So in Li Yao's work, they are considering the E is just the tangent bundle direct sum of some trivial bundle and then deform the bundle structure. But for this work of Andreas Garcia-Fernandez, they allow more general choice of E. And our breakthrough is the Fu Yao's paper in 2008. So they obtained some genuine non-Kähler solution, which are certain T2 bounded over K3 surfaces constructed by Goldstein-Perkushkin. Basically, what they do is they find a very clever choice of answers to this system, and then the whole system can be reduced to a PDE on K3, and they can solve it, but not explicitly. It's just a prove the existence of solution. And a similar idea was used by Fu Zheng Yao and Becker Zheng Yao to give some local models. And there's also an M-theory dual picture in their work. And there are also various solutions found on Neo manifolds. So Neo manifolds are just some homogeneous manifolds which are a quotient of Neo potent Lie groups. So there are various authors working on this problem. And Calavero Israel find a solution on the blow up of a conifold. So this is not the usual resolved conifold. If you just resolve the conifold singularity, it's a small resolution. So the extra thing is a P1. But for this blow up, you get a P1 cross P1 over the singularity. And myself and Yao also found a solution on SL2C and also on their quotients. So the thing I want to point out is that all the non-solutions have certain special structure. Either being homogeneous or there's a holomorphic fibration structure. So as far as I know, no general theorem has been proved about, say, the existence of the solution. So there's also some motivation from math part to study these equations here. So let's recall the conical transition. You must be very familiar with this famous picture in Candelas and Delaos's paper. So you have this conifold, which is the affine quadric summation zi squared equals zero in C4. So topologically, this is a cone over S3 cross S2, and this cone point is the isolated singularity centered at the origin. So this is the conifold. And on one hand, you can resolve it, this singularity, by replace this conifold point by a copy of P1. So what you have is like, this is S2, this is S3, this is S2. So replace this cone point by a copy of P1, which is a two-sphere. And what we get can be identified as this O minus one bundle over P1, the total space. On the other hand, you can also deform the equation. So you can replace zero on right-hand side by a very small complex number T. And what you do pictorically is just replace this cone point by a three sphere. So what you see is this picture. You can think it the other way. So you start with this O minus one, then you contract this P1. By this procedure, you will decrease the H2 by one because you shrink a two cycle. And then when you deform it out, you'll get a new three cycle. So the topology from both sides is different. So this is the conifold transition. And in the Candelas and Delaos's paper, so they study this, they constructed explicit Ricci flat Kähler matrix on both sides. And they analyze this asymptotic behavior when it goes to this conifold limit. We'll see that this conifold transition is really a local picture, and in general, it will take place in some non-Kähler category. So we may want to also find some non-Kähler solutions to this Strominger system here, and this may be useful to give some gluing construction when really deal with compactification problem. So on this smooth conifold case, which is the right-hand side, you can identify it with the complex B group SL2C by making linear change of coordinates. And as I mentioned, myself and Yao found a solution on it. And in my talk today, I will tell you how to construct solution to this compactification equations on this resolved conifold side. This is O minus one over P1. So the global picture of this conifold transition is that you start with some projective, say, Calabi-Yau threefold X tilde, and you can find, say, finitely many disjoint P1s inside your X tilde whose normal bundle is just O minus one minus one. So you can contract this P1s, then you arrive at a singular Calabi-Yau threefold X naught with finitely many ordinary double points. And when certain condition is satisfied, this singularities can be simultaneously smoothed out to give you another smooth Calabi-Yau threefold XT, which in general is non-Kähler. And we see from this picture here that X tilde and XT have different topology. So there's a famous conjecture made by Reid, known as the Reid's fantasy, which says any reasonably nice Calabi-Yau threefold can be connected by a sequence of conifold transition. So you can, the picture is like this. So if you have this, this is like, you think of this as a moduli space of X tilde, and there's also a moduli space of this XT. They have different topology, but somehow their boundaries are connected to each other. So because this X naught is sitting on the common boundary of this two moduli space when you compactify the moduli space. And this tells us the moduli space of all Calabi-Yau threefolds may have this, may be connected, but have different components. So this is basically the Reid's conjecture. And to really understand this boundary behavior of the problem, it's very good to have a canonical matrix so we can work on. So for the projective case, there's a canonical choice, which is the Ricci flat metric. But for the non-Kähler part, I think Strominger system, the solutions can be think of guidance to the canonical matrix on non-Kähler Calabi-Yau threefold, and hopefully this will be useful to understand the moduli space of Calabi-Yau threefold. Okay, so the first thing I'm trying to work on is to construct some solutions on a compact non-Kähler Calabi-Yau threefold. And a very good candidate for this background space is so-called Calabi-Gray models. This dates back to a very classical construction of Calabi. So what they did is, what he did is the following. So identify R7 with the imaginary part of the octonions. So just like you can think of R3 as the imaginary quaternions, and you can use the multiplication law for quaternions to express the cross product in R3. So you can do the same thing, and there's also a cross product defined on this R7. And it has the properties you want. So then for any immersed oriented hypersurface inside R7, so the picture is like, here you have this is R7, say, and you have some hypersurface inside it called M. So at each point you have a union normal inside R7. Then for any tangent vector to this hypersurface, you can cook up a new tangent vector. It's just taking the cross product of this, so I use the new for the normal, cross with your tangent vector. So this vector here will again be perpendicular to the normal new. So it's again lensing the tangent vector, but it will rotate your tangent vector. And if you apply it twice, you'll find that it's j squared to minus one. So what you get is almost complex structure. And this almost complex structure is also compatible with your metric on R7. So what you get is, in fact, the SU3 structure. And the natural question to ask is when this almost complex structure integrable. And so Calabi also write down the if and only if condition for that. And in particular, he gave the following example. So you should think of this, what's happening here is really on the universal cover of what I'm describing here. So it's not really on R7. So you take sigma g is oriented minimal surface inside the flat T3. So by minimal, I mean it's area minimizing. So its mean curvature is zero. Then we take our m to be just the product of sigma g with T4. This is a hypersurface in T3 cross T4. So on the universal cover, the we can construct this J, and in fact this can descend to our M, and this J is integrable, and MJ gives you a non-Kähler manifold. So there are a few remarks about this construction. So first we need some minimal surface in T3, and indeed it exists for all genus bigger than 3, so there are lots of examples. And we also have this, so our M is just the Riemann surface cross T4, and it will project to sigma G, and this projection is holomorphic. And Calabi first used this construction to give an example that C1 of a complex manifold really depends on the complex structure. So it is not a smooth invariant because in our for our complex structure J here, because it comes from an SU3 structure, so its C1 should be 0. But if you just take a trivial product of sigma G with T4, then you should get something with non-zero C1. So our complex structure is really a twisted one. And Gray generalized Calabi's constructions. So basically, you can for this construction here, you can replace R7 by any G2 manifold. And to really get an integrable complex structure, you can replace this T4 by any hyperKähler 4 manifold. Okay, and also one can show that this, our M constructed here has trivial canonical. So this is a very nicely behaved non-Kähler Calabi L threefold. And there's also a natural metric induced from the ambient space, and it is a balanced metric. So this is a fantastic place to start working on solving this problem. And because for this second equation here, we need to calculate this curvature term. So we can first solve for a holomorphic frame for the, say, for our manifold, for the tangent bundle. And immediately you'll, after do the calculation, you'll find that all the holomorphic one forms really comes from the base, which means the Hodge number H10 is the same as the Hodge number H10 of the Riemann surface, which is given by this genus. On the other hand, our manifold M is a product, so its Betti number, the first Betti number is really 2G plus 4. So we see that this Hodge symmetry on the H10 and H01 level is broken. So in other words, M does not satisfy what's called a DD-bar lemma. It's not a Fujiki class C. Basically what I'm saying is that this M is very far away from being algebraic. So it's really a non-Kähler manifold. Okay, so now we proceed to try to attack this Strominger system here. So let me introduce some notations. Sigma G, recall it's a surface inside of this T3. So there's a Gauss map given by this unit normal, which is a map to P1, S2 inside R3. And for T4, what's really important is its hyperKähler structure. So by hyperKähler, I mean there are three compatible complex structures which satisfy the quaternion relation, and all of them will give you a Kähler structure. And there's also an induced metric on the Riemann surface and also on our manifold M, and they are related in the expression I described there. So from this, you can see that you can see this fibration structure. So this omega sigma G is the metric on the base, and the other term is the metric on the fiber. And one can also write down this holomorphic 3-0 form, which satisfies this norm is a constant with respect to this particular metric. So now, if we just begin with this metric induced from the ambient space, it's already solved this third equation here. But this metric is too rigid somehow. We want to have some freedom to also solve the other equations. So a key observation is that you can, because of this vibration structure, you can feed in some conformal factors in the two parts of our metric. So here you can cook up this one parameter family of metric depend only on a function on the base. And this will always solve the third equation here, conformally balanced equation. So in general, this is the easiest equation to solve, and we'll always start from this equation. So this family here will always solve the third equation. So now we solve this equation here already. And then we vary this parameter f to try to solve this anomaly cancellation equation. So we need to just do some calculation. The left-hand side is IDD bar of omega f, which is just given by the expression there. And the first term in right-hand side is this from the curvature of the tangent bundle. What you get is another IDD bar exact term, and what inside the parenthesis is some term very similar to left-hand side. So they only differ by a factor. Therefore, if we equate these two factors here, basically this is the equation, and we set this f to be zero, then we solve the second equation. Okay. And for f equals zero, it's also solve the Hermitian-Young-Mills equation. So in this sense, we seem to have solved the whole problem. But there is a caveat. So to really get rid of anomaly, we need to impose that equation there, which will determine our f. But this on the right-hand side is d nu. This nu is this Gauss map, which is the branch cover from our Riemann surface to P1. So there are branch points, and d nu will vanish at those points. Therefore, the corresponding solution metric is degenerate on those points. So which means the metric there is zero, identically zero. And this is a problem. But this is not too bad of a problem. Probably one can remedy this from receiving maybe higher order corrections. I'm not 100% clear. But anyway, if we want to solve this whole system here, we need to deal with this degeneracy problem. And this problem is caused by taking this branch cover from our Riemann surface to P1. So to do that, we need to give another interpretation of our Calabi-Gray model, M. So let me recall some geometry stuff from hyperkähler geometry. So by definition, a hyperkähler manifold is just a Riemannian manifold with three compatible complex structure I, J, and K satisfying this quaternion relation, such that this metric is scalar with respect to all of I, J, and K. So the hyperkähler manifold must have real dimension, a multiple of 4. And if for the smallest possibility, so it's a real dimension 4, for if it is compact, then there are only the T4 and K3 surface. But if you allow non-compact, then there are many more possibilities. So say there are gravitational instantons, which are also known as Ricci flat ALE spaces. And also there are many other choices. The important fact I'll use about hyperkähler manifolds is that there's actually a twister family of complex structures, a P1, S2 family of it. And also there are anti-self dual, which is just to come from this gravitational instanton description. So because So we have this, because we have this S2 family of complex structure, we can construct the twister space. So this was first proposed by Penrose, and Atiya Hitchens-Singer worked out this Riemannian four-dimension case. And since we are dealing with hyperkähler manifold, so we'll follow this Hitchin, Tarlet, Lindstrom, and Rolchek's description of this twister space of hyperkähler manifolds. So let M be a hyperkähler manifold, can be any dimension. And the twister space as a complex, as a differential manifold, is just a product of N with P1. But it is equipped with a complex structure, again, twisted. Basically, what you do is you have this twister family of complex structures. So this is, you think of this as a P1 here. And you have the fiber are just the hyperkähler manifold. And at different fiber, you just put on this different complex structure inside your twister family. So this twister space will encode all the information from the twister family. And this is, so the total space of the twister space is another complex manifold, which is one dimensional higher. And this projection down to this space P1 is again holomorphic. And another important fact is that this relative cotangent bundle of this from this projection, if you wedge it and twist it by the pullback of O2 from the base, has a global section, which defines a holomorphic symplectic form on each fiber. So each fiber is just a hyperkähler manifold, and there's a holomorphic symplectic form there. So this is, and if you want to describe it mathematically, you can do what I wrote there. So the key observation is that our Calabi-Gray model are really come from the pullback from the twister family. So the picture is that over the P1, you have this twister family of hyperkähler manifold. And because sigma g is the minimal surface in T3, there's a Gauss map is actually holomorphic. And so you can pull back the twister family from using this Gauss map, then you'll arrive at our M. And with this interpretation, we know that the degeneracy really comes from this branch cover or the Gauss map. So to get rid of this degeneracy, it's very natural to just try to solve this whole system on the twister space itself instead of pulling it back. But the problem is that the twister space can never have a trivial canonical bundle. So what we do is we can remove a closed subset from the twister space to make it a non-compact Calabi-Yau.
So why does your construction have the
Calabi-Gray
construction
have a trivial canonical
bundle, but the
twister
space doesn't? If you take your sigma g to be an S2,
uh-huh. Sigma g cannot be S2. It has genus at least 3. Ah. So in order for sigma g to be minimal, it must be at least genus 3. So this Gauss map here has degree g minus 1. Basically, the pullback of the O1 bundle over P1 will be a spin structure on your Riemann surface. And as long as that is satisfied, you'll kill the C1 of your pullback. So that's the reason why you get a Calabi-Yau after pullback, but it's not a Calabi-Yau on the twister space. Okay. So what we do is that we need to remove a fiber actually from this holomorphic, this twister fibration. And that is enough to get a non-compact Calabi-Yau. So if you can remove any fiber of this twister fibration here. So you just So you just get a copy of C here, and you remove this fiber over, say, this infinity. Then this will give you a non-compact Calabi-Yau threefold. And we'll always assume that the fiber is over infinity, and you can actually write down explicitly the holomorphic threefold on this X, which is the twisted space minus a fiber. Okay. Then what we do is we try to, again, solve this equations on this our X. So this is the fibration picture there, and there's some interesting examples. So if we take the N, this is a hyper-Kähler manifold, to be just R4, then the X we get is biholomorphic to C3. And if we take N to be the Iguchi-Hansen space, and we can and choose F carefully, so the different choice of F will give you different X in general. And in this case, X is just it's a resolved conifold. This is an observation made by Hitchin. And the main result is that for any hyperkähler N, and we can construct an X like I described, then we can always write down an explicit solution to the system on this X.
Can you remove a section instead of a fiber?
So if you think if you are asking for holomorphic sections, it's I think the only natural choice are these twister lines. So it's just some what you get is just this the P1 cross with this hyperkähler manifold minus a point. And I don't think in general you get Calabi-Yau. The reason you get a Calabi-Yau here comes really from this third fact I listed here. So already now you have a global section, holomorphic section for this bundle, which defines basically a 2-0 form on each fiber, holomorphic. And after you remove a point from the base, you can trivialize this pi star O2 part. And also you can just write down a
Calabi-Yau form is basically this times the Calabi-Yau form
on the base. Yeah, that's true. But if you remove a section, you cannot trivialize this base part. So I don't think you get a Calabi-Yau. Okay, so again, we use the strategy now is again like before. We start with the third equation. But now we can actually add a little more complexity, so we can actually feed in two functions in this case. So this is our answers for the metric. This also again is a fiber direction and the base direction, and we feeding these two different conformal factors between before them. So G will be a function only defined on the depend on the base, and H is a function depend only on fiber. And one can check that this answers will always solve the third equation. And then we try to vary G and H to solve the anomaly cancellation equation. To do that, we just repeat what we did for the Calabi-Gray case. But the computation here now is much more complicated because now we allow arbitrary hyperkähler N. So the curvature of N will play a role. You'll see that after this calculation, you'll find that the left-hand side, again, is IDD bar of something. And first, the tangent bundle curvature term has three components. The first one is, again, IDD bar exact term. And what's inside this here is very similar to what's on the left-hand side. The only difference is this sign here. And then we also have another curvature term which comes from the relative codeine bundle of this vibration. And the third term is a dBot log B squared term. And this B is defined as S cubed over E to the 2H plus G. So to solve the, to cancel the anomaly, we can again set G to be an appropriate constant to equate these two terms here. And this curvature term can be canceled by this our extra bundle curvature term. And we also want to put this term to be zero. And this can always be done if we set H to be a constant. But we don't have to do to set H to be a constant. So if we do this, we solve this, the anomaly equation. And the only thing we are left is the Hermitian-Young-Mills equation, because now we are using a non-trivial F. And this is something you can check mathematically to just carry out the calculation. The reason for that is that this relative cotangent bundle really comes from the metric on the fiber direction. It's a hyperkähler metric. So it is anti-self-dual, and it will satisfy this Hermitian-Young-Mills equation automatically. So in this case, we actually solve the whole system. And let me give you a concrete example. So take n to be just R4. Then we know that our x is isomorphic to C3. And I'll use W1, W2, and zeta be its complex coordinates. And the solution metric in this case can be written down explicitly. So S is something I mentioned. S is 1 plus zeta norm squared. And the U1, U2, which are showing up in this coefficients here, are given by this. These are some non-holomorphic function on our C3. And this metric will solve the Schrödinger system, and in fact, it is conformally flat and non-Kähler. There's a remark I want to make, is that, so to solve this anomaly cancellation equation, I impose the condition that dV bar log B squared to zero. We know if H is a constant, then this is always true, but H does not have to be a constant. In fact, in the case N is R4, we can also take H of the following form, where this x is just the position vector in R4. And this will give us a solution on C cross the punctured two-plane. But in general, I don't know how to find such an H, because there's a lack of explicit knowledge about hyperkähler metrics. And so if you don't have any symmetry to help you, then this dd bar log b squared equals zero is a very complicated equation. And if you have some symmetry from your hyperkähler metric, then maybe you can reduce to some ODE, then you know how to deal with that. Okay, so in conclusion, what I have done is the following. So for any hyperkähler four manifold N, we can take its twister space Zn and remove a fiber F. Then we arrive at some non-compact Calabi-Yau threefold. We can always construct explicit solution to the Schrödinger system on this X. And such manifolds include C3 and O minus the resolved conifold and special examples. And they are very important local pieces to construct non-Kähler Calabi-Yau threefolds. So hopefully these local models can be used in gluing to give more general solutions, say solutions on a compact non-Kähler manifold. Yeah, I think that is all I want to say.
to vibrations over sigma g.
Mm-hmm.
Can you add in missing fibers and get a compact geometry?
So if you just pull back to sigma g, it's already compact, actually. You mean you pull back the after you remove a fiber, you pull back more?
Yes. It's not, well. So if you just have the standard Fischer space,
uh-huh.
and your fibers are compact, you pull that back, and you're saying that gives a Calabi-Yau fibered over sigma g. But you also have this lovely explicit construction of the metric on the twister space itself if you remove the fiber. Can you somehow bootstrap that to give you some construction of the metric on the compact space over sigma g?
So I guess is that if you do the pullback, because there's a branch cover, it is a branch cover on the bay, on the metric on the twister space side will give you something degenerate. So you must add something in. So I think that's, I don't know how to do that.
So what's the difference between the two metrics? One is obtained by putting back a metric on the twister space. The other one is obtained by putting back the one on the complement after you.
The original metric there.
The original happy of gray model metric on that is pull back from the metric on the distance space, the color space. It has some similarity.
Yeah, you can think of that. I think you.
But you also have a metric after you remove the fiber.
Mm-hmm.
You can also pull back the metric to have your gray model.
Mm-hmm.
What's the difference between these two?
I think if you just pull back this, you may arrive at something with less singularity because you can remove, say, a fiber over the branched point. Then you get less singularity.
It also looked like the bundles that you have, the ones E or whatever, were different in the cases.
Yeah, because that's because at the Calabi gray models I only take T4, but here I'm taking I'm allowing any arbitrary hyperkilometrical. So actually, in that case, if your N here is again T4, then this relative bundle again is trivial. You can make it to be flat. But I think what else you can do is that you can also apply this perturbation argument I mentioned at the beginning to this solution. Maybe you can arrive at more solutions.
Yeah. Can you just go back to the formal factory?
This one.
But then later you have, you set G to be, basically either the G was like ordered up or down.
Yeah, G.
So that whole metric is, it's like decided off the front. Isn't that?
Yes.
Doesn't that lead to problems? Is there a derivative off the front? Everything is already ordered up. Physically, you'd expect that the metric is scaled down to
strict
scale.
Trust this alpha expansion. Yeah, that's true. But to solve this equation, alpha prime must appear somewhere, right? If the both sides doesn't involve alpha prime, then what you get is scalar.
Right, but that's not solving this should be very hard.
But again, so this part is of alpha prime. Indeed, but this H can be chosen to be any constant, actually. So this factor will give you can be large. So H.
The base
is shrinking.
Base is small.
Yeah.
But then I wouldn't trust that alpha transformation.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe. So H here can be any constant. So it's not the whole metric shrinking down. yeah, you're right. For this solution, I guess, this base part is of the order.
But those are compact solutions, but there
are some degenerate.
So you can solve it with a trivial bundle?
Yeah, if you take the n to be t, then you can solve this trivial bundle. But if you, I guess if you take t, replace t by any hyperkähler stuff, manifold, then you also arrive at this relative codangent bundle.
Yes, I understand.